The New York Times app has all this stuff that you may not have seen.
The way the tabs are at the top with all of the different sections.
I can immediately navigate to something that matches what I'm feeling.
I go to games always.
Doing the mini, doing the Wordle.
I loved how much content it exposed me to, things that I never would have thought to turn to a news app for.
This app is essential.
The New York Times app. All of the times, all in one place. Download it now at nytimes.com/app. On the east side till I die, till I die, till I die. Bubba now bone thugs till I die, till I die, till I die.
In the hood I'm good till I die, till I CLE till I die. Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your jump right in that crowd boy of music, news, and criticism. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at the New York Times.
I am Joe Coscarelli. I'm a culture reporter at the New York Times.
MGK is with us today. You certainly know MGK from a, at this point, 15-year career. You may know him as a wild boy from his early 2010s hip-hop albums and mixtapes. You may know him from his pop punk turn. On my wish list. She knows my pressure points, it hurts. In the early 2020s,
that's Tickets to My Downfall and Mainstream Sellout, two number one albums. He's coming back now with Lost Americana out August 8th. Comes on the heels of a highly documented tabloid relationship with Megan Fox. The couple welcomed a daughter earlier this year. Quite a journey for MGK.
Personal, professional, musical, psychological, spiritual, and we're going to talk about it all. So welcome to Popcast MGK.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I would like to first talk about the awkward how long this stretch is. So maybe I should just
okay,
keep
it. These are good notes.
Like,
you're a really tall guy.
Yeah.
Maybe he can reach. Mm-hmm. John was like, I need some room for my feet.
I'm a tall guy. I need like a little bit of foot room.
We have not perfected. The set placement is a work in progress.
I think I'm going to keep, I'll keep it in my hand.
Lost Americana.
Yeah.
Your new album.
Yeah.
How do you sum up the album for people?
Well, one, it's me leaving the Tower of Babel and getting back on like the open road.
Yeah.
You know, in the sense of it's acknowledging the presence of the gossip and the chatter, but choosing simplicity, choosing things that make me feel more connected with a version of myself that was more connected with happiness. I mean, I think it's like reawakening the eternal boy archetype in a healthy way. I think like there's actually a book called Now or Neverland, which deals with the Jungian eternal boy archetype.
I was going to say Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, the actual backstory before the Disney adopted version of Peter Pan is one of, I mean, it's pretty dark. And I think there's two different paths. And I mean, I am not a Jungian, and God forbid I even attempt to start pulling out the exact terminology for
all the psychology PhDs in the audience. Yeah, are going to be really agitated.
They're waiting for me to say the wrong term. Yeah. I won't even go there. You can insert them below, but they, there's ones in which they embrace their destiny and the eternal boy serves them, meaning it gives them the constant creativity, you know, because that's what that boyishness keeps you riled up and, you know, that keeps the creative juices flowing. And then there's the other ones in which, you know, a young preemptive death is imminent. And I think a premature death is imminent.
And you get stuck.
Because they aren't rooted.
Right.
You know, and so I think I've danced the line of that very heavy. And I think this album swayed this way.
Another wise man called it a personal excavation of the American dream.
Absolutely.
A sonic map of forgotten places, a tribute to the spirit of reinvention, and a quest to reclaim the essence of American freedom.
For sure.
So that was in the album trailer for Lost Americana, which was narrated by a very familiar voice that most people have taken to be Bob Dylan.
This album is a love letter to those who seek to rediscover the dreamers, the drifters, the defiant. It's a sonic map of forgotten places, a tribute to the spirit of reinvention, and a quest to reclaim the authentic essence of American freedom.
That is correct.
This came on the heels of Bob Dylan posting an old video of you to his Instagram account.
Yeah.
Yes, Bob Dylan has an Instagram account, has a TikTok too. That video, side note, filmed at my childhood record store.
Really?
Park Ave CDs.
Oh my God, yes.
In Orlando, Florida, yes. Winter Park. I used to drive with my friends 45 minutes to go buy an album there. So there you are at Park Ave CDs in like, what, 2015, 2016? And then there it is on Bob Dylan's Instagram.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
What happened? Why?
Are you and Bob and kind of like, are you sending him old live videos of yourself often? Like, and then
how did he find
that? How did it end up on his Instagram?
How did you find out?
No, the only ethos in which Bob existed in my life is being in the greatest of all time category, sitting in a thought bubble above my head.
Never met.
To this day. I have met him since. That's the beauty of manifestation and how the universe has aligned this album so brilliantly, which the only other time I felt anything so serendipitous was on Tickets to My Downfall. That was the only time I ever was like, wow, like all these stars aligned.
But yeah, take us on that journey from
First off, I'm in my sunken pit in my house. We recorded this album in my living room because our studio burnt down in the LA fires. The studio that we loved recording at, that we had put a lot of our vibes into, it crumbled.
Which part of town was it?
This was in Malibu. I mean, here's the real truth. I spent Christmas and New Year's, the whole month of December and late November, in a rehab facility. I came out, the world was very loud about me and my personal business. Mm-hmm. Ironically, neither me or Megan have said anything. I mean, still to this day, there could have been zero drama, and you would never know because none of us have said one thing.
Right.
It's all anonymous.
Absolutely.
They're broken up.
Yeah,
They're not getting back together.
Things that have happened out of our control, I guess. And I came home to this. I was somewhat aware when I was in there, but you have no phones. You have no nothing. I mean, essentially the only thing I have on my side is my fan pages and my friends and family. So I come home and I'm like, okay, it's the 6th of January, I think, was when I got home. I started to let go of a lot of the material excitement that normally I would have had. I mean, I'm like a king of FOMO. So when you're in there and, you know, my friend Jelly Roll is like, we're come perform New Year's Eve in front of millions of people and all these other things. And you're just like, I'm going to sit in this gray room with a cold shower and thoughts and just
trying to get right.
Get right.
Yeah.
And so
you're going through it.
For sure. And so I get home and I'm like, I'm going to try a water fast. And so I get to the third day of the water fast. The fires start, but they start pretty close to the house. I'm like, I'm just going to push it and go for 4 days of this water fast. On the fourth day, at Michael B. Jordan's house, who's my neighbor, and we're looking and the fire's like right there. My body's already going through it. I'm pushing myself to a kind of through a delirious state. And I'm not really sure if the house is going to burn or anything like that. I kind of just gather up some letters, and I grab like a Banksy piece and a Picasso piece.
different than some people's evacuation plan, but good for you.
Well, art is life to me. So art to me, it's like my duty to protect like other people's legacy.
Yeah, you're the steward of that.
I don't
care
if it's like my clothes or
replaceable.
Yeah, man, that's like what, but art to me is that's like a vital organ.
Sure.
So I'm trying to keep it alive.
Yeah.
Because the Picasso, it's in pencil.
Oh,
so
it's
even
one
like if someone fucking brings an eraser, I'm like, whoa, buddy.
Not in my house.
And I left and I was like, since I missed Christmas and New Year's with my daughter, I was like, hey, like, let's go somewhere. And we went and I came back. It didn't hit my house. It burnt the studio that we love to the ground, as well as many other people's places and things. And so we were like, okay, well, what do we do? And this album to me is kind of like a crossroads of exploration and solidification, as well as a reconciling of me and my best friends in the music space, because the last two albums I made heavily with Travis Barker.
Yeah.
And all the albums before I made with my best friends.
Yeah.
And I was like, obviously I wanted Travis's involvement always, because that's my mentor. But me and my best friends were like, hey, like, let's do this again.
Like we used to.
And yeah. And like, also, like, I'm so sick of people feeling like to hit it big with the song, like there is the recipe is this person or this person, these go-to call
this
guys. And I'm like, dude,
producer.
Miss me with that, man. I've worked with them and respect to them, but I hate those records, dude. Like, I don't even listen to those of my, it feels like a Keurig cup of coffee versus like a dripped, slow dripped, organic coffee that you went and picked out and loved the notes of. And
right. Great metaphor.
Yep.
If you say that name did it with you, oh, I love it.
Right.
But if I love it. And you're just like, what? That's like a placebo effect. That's like, I want to solidify me as a songwriter. I believe in my songwriting on a prolific level so adamantly that I have, there was, I watched after Take Us to My Downfall, I watched a couple artists specifically, major artists, they were like, oh, well, we want to do a rock album. And they brought in every single person of the team that I assembled, except for me. And then the rock, I didn't do what it was. And I said, but what ingredient do you think
was missing
though? Like, who do you think is writing that? Who do you like? Mm-hmm. We all are, you know, but like, dude, I felt very undermined.
Mm-hmm.
And so the solidification was being like, we are going to come and make, whether it's pop songs, rock songs, rap songs. And at that point, when I came out that water fast and got back from the vacation with my daughter, I did not know what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm. And there's a little of each of that on this record.
There is.
Yeah.
But I know for sure the music that I had made on for whatever the album was supposed to be the last 2 years, I couldn't stand. So I erased all of it. I kept my palms open. I felt like the Akashic Records just sent me some downloads, and I started making Lost Americana. And the exploration was, we are not going to pick any genre.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to make this freely. And I think the pivotal moment was when Slim, who was one of the producers on the record, goes, let's spend some money and like, let's buy a bunch of analog synths.
Mm-hmm.
Let's like not do like home studio setup. Mm-hmm. Let's like build this out for real. And that sound on Outlaw Overture, which is the intro of the album. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, oh, it reminds me of Bob O'Reilly, which absolutely, there's hints of that. But to me, there's also Contact from Daft Punk.
Okay.
Yep.
We spent, I think, I don't know how many months, like going and gathering coins, and we went to a bank and dropped the coins in, and it converts it to dollars, and we bought a Juno with that.
When you guys were young.
When we were young, shared an apartment together. Yeah, Baze, No Love, Nick Long, Sean Singh, Emma Rosen, Femme, Terrace Martin, John Batiste, and there was a very tribal, ritualistic, you know, thing going on as we made the music, just in the sense of like a bunch of young underdogs, you know, making something to kind of punch the system in the face. And nothing made me happier than Cliche, which is it's only a month or 2 months in, but I would say it's an undisputed pop hit.
Mm-hmm. The first single from this album.
Yeah. And we walked in and we were like, yeah, we just made this.
It sounds cliche, but tell me, would you wait for me? Baby, I'm a rolling stone. I got a lot of right in me, but I don't want to say this wrong. Tell me, would you stay with me? Maybe we can make this.
No one putting sauce on it. Like,
there's no beguiling on this album.
Just beguiling. Fuck with that.
Beguiling
this,
free.
Yeah.
It is.
Unbeguiled.
This album is not a character.
You also said when we were coming up from the elevator, when we were talking about the rollout, you said you feel like you're stripped away all the cool.
Yes.
And I wonder if you can talk about that, because I think a lot of people from the outside looking in will look at you and say, well,
seems this guy's like a cool guy to me.
Yeah, this guy's been cool for more than a decade, but you're saying, hey, I've hit this place and it's actually time to shed all that?
I mean, dude, any interview of me in my 20s, I'm just like, you could put a gun on my mouth and let it go. It makes me like cringe to the max. Also, you need the arc of like, dumbass.
To enlighten.
Prophetic. Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
You've been on that journey.
Or definitely. Alternately, dumbass prophetic.
I'm grateful that it went the other way.
Yeah.
I think there was a characterization that I was playing into that really loved being a polarizing figure.
Mm-hmm.
I think though, when I'm at home at night, if you look at my astrological chart, it's one of the most like sensitive charts that exist. Among other gnarly diagnoses that I have, like hypersensitivity is one of the things. So I have a hardened shell. I grew up a battle rapper. Like I am, mm-hmm. I am prepped for war pretty much at all times. And yeah. we've watched me do it. But this is like the truth is, it felt much more satiating to the broken boy that I have just now finally like picked up, sat next to me, and I've been like, I'm adopting you mm-hmm. to be the simpatico versus being the polarizing figure.
Mm-hmm. So when did Bob Dylan post you on Instagram in that
Holy
journey?
Holy shit, is that how he fucking, oh my God, dude. I am so sorry.
No, it's like, great.
But we went on a ride there.
Yeah. I am so sorry.
It was a Dylan-esque ride.
I was doing that exact same thing where I was having a rant in the sunken couch about, is this the right album we're making? Because in my heart and a lot of, you know, half of my fan base is like, make this rap album that we have been promised and been waiting for forever. Mm-hmm. And in my heart, my DNA is hip hop. And I'm like having a conversation like this with being like, are we doing the right thing? I'm tripping out, man. Like, is that like, I don't want to disappoint the fans. I don't, mm-hmm. We had two number ones. I want to hit the hat trick with this third one.
Mm-hmm.
And all while I'm doing this, I'm basically being like, I'm about to erase everything again.
Mm.
And someone goes, dude, Bob Dylan just posted you. And we're like, on what? And then we check and I'm like, oh, for sure it's a fake one. Like, you know how they do on Twitter where it's like Will Ferrell, but it's like Will and one of the R's is
two R's.
And so we're looking for any mistakes in Bob Dylan's name. We're like, all right. Like,
there's a blue check.
But then I'm looking and it's like, dude, it's like all, everything on his grid is like black and white, like old, either it's like Malcolm X or like dead jazz players or, you know, and I'm like, okay, how do I fit in here? What's going on? And it's like a D-side MGK video from like the 17th page of my YouTube channel, you know?
Live at Park Ave CDs in Winter Park, Florida.
Totally. And I'm just, and in that video, by the way, I'm just hopped up on cocaine, rapping for 15 minutes, like mm-hmm. wouldn't shut up. My hands are just moving. Like and we watched it. We were kind of like, damn, that was hard.
Yeah, you know? Like, kind of going off.
Yeah, going off, like, cool choice.
I see why he likes it. I said that this morning when I was watching. I was like, you know, I see why he likes this, but also, what the hell?
And we messaged him and we were like, dude, like,
you DM'd him.
No. Oh. We might like message found his manager and we were like, dude, did he mean to do this? And we get into talks, but he's like, yeah, I guess, you know, he likes you. And we were like, hey, well, we have this album that's so rooted in almost everything you
are about,
man. And I don't know if there's something here. And I'm in the back of my head, I'm like, well, you didn't even promote your own movie or do anything. Right, so I'm like, this is a super like, fat chance. Yeah. But anyway, I took it.
You shot your shot.
I shot my shot. Same thing I did with DMX and how I got him on my first album. Mm-hmm. Same thing with, I mean, dude, I have this thing where as many of, you know, the heroes that I've had that, I've collided with, you mm-hmm. know, like I have just as many that I've somehow
brought in
and, mm-hmm. you know, that was really interesting. And I met Bob at the Hollywood Bowl in the most, like, he's the most elusive snow leopard I've ever, like, even just, you know, he gave me tickets to the show, but no guarantee of meeting. And then like, I kept texting to the person like, hey, I'm wearing a,
right. Right. Like, as if they don't know who you are.
Six foot four, like, bleached hair.
I mean, this seat, just in case.
Lots of tattoos.
And then, he goes up and nothing. And then out of nowhere, dude, like right before Willie Nelson came up, guy's like, you want me, Bob?
Unbelievable.
And I was like, sure. And I guess I'll just keep that part private. But then, dude, I just came here a couple days ago after having a dinner with Mick Jagger.
Wild.
In London. So it's just these like Thanos stones of, you know.
When you talk to them, without obviously revealing sort of like private details of conversations, but like, obviously it's clear you're a fan of them.
Yeah.
When they talk to you, what do they say about why they're welcoming you into their orbit?
Well, Mick Jagger had that quote. I forgot what it was exactly, but it was something along the lines of, oh, MGK is making rock and roll fun again.
Yeah.
And I think when they sit down, I'm so curious. I'm also awkward, so I just want to immediately like ask questions to, but I think I'll just go to like, okay, these guys are from eras of all of the greatest. He is quite possibly the greatest frontman of all time. I'm like, hey, any Michael Jackson stories, any Prince. Any
so you're
Prince
just going
stories,
in. You're doing Bob our Dylan job. Stories. You're doing our
that.
Job.
Yeah, yeah, I'm having podcasts with him and I'm just like, you know, hanging on to every word because he's so interesting and he's so alive. But I didn't ask him like, I don't know. I guess in theory it makes sense, but in person I'd probably be like, so how do you, what do you feel about me? If you, if you look me in my eyes,
tell
me how awesome I am. Yeah, exactly.
Am I good? Am I really album good? Four or album five? Yeah, like I need to know. Yeah.
What is your
you
favorite?
You like the rap stuff or the pop punk stuff?
Well,
like,
dude, Bob liking me as a rapper, it blew. It was just like,
I mean, he raps. Yeah, again, Bob, dude,
Bob's
the
original,
clues.
Bob's the original like rap song, OG white rapper. He must know. Yeah. Like he must hear. Like he knows.
Dog, in the basement cooking up the medicine. Like it doesn't get more gangster than that, bro. That's like a feat. That's a clips.
Mm-hmm, it's a clip
that's
like for.
That's where like the like
Yellow
that,
Wolf sampled it. Famously. Yeah,
it was great. Yellow's version of that was hard.
It's really good.
Yeah.
There's still time.
There's still time.
So
I loved on the, you know, just like to music nerd out really quick.
Yeah,
when I had these sessions with Pharrell, and I remember the first thing I asked him was, yo, on track two on Hell Hath No Fury, why was the hi-hat off? There's just one hi-hat. It's on Mama, I'm So Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to it,
let's do it.
Dude,
yeah.
Listen, tell me if you hear it. I always wanted this
as
a kid.
It's like offbeat or it's muted?
Like he didn't quantize it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. It's a little wrong.
A little stutter.
Did he know? Did he know what you're talking about?
Yeah.
That's cool. The thing.
I mean, it lasted me 20 years. I've been waiting to ask that question forever. Like, I got in the session. I was like, thank you so much for having me and working with me.
What the fuck with the hi-hat?
Why the fuck is that hi-hat?
You are welcome to come and sit third chair if you ever want to come and do an interview with us.
Yeah, we just had clips here. We asked them some similar type questions.
Yeah.
You know?
That sort of picks up on an idea because obviously, dinner with Mick Jagger, private session with Bob Dylan.
Beef with Eminem, which you alluded to.
Studio sessions with P. But I wonder, you have all these, it's an overused word in pop, but you have all these eras, right? You have moments in time. You have the Wild Boy era.
Yeah.
You've got your mid-period bad boy rap stuff. You have your pop punk emergence in 2020. And I wonder if you can... You've seen how the world has looked at you during each of those times. Do you feel like people afford you more respect now than they did in the early years?
Honestly, the desire to look for it has just left me. I don't care.
It's immaterial, really, if you're not looking for it.
I have a fan base that has not left me for 15 years and that is constantly growing. So I don't know why I would be looking for the vocal minority, you know,
to
and
see if you convince them to
yeah,
come to your
I
side.
I don't care. I remember trying so hard and I don't care because also, you know, you forget that the mass amounts of people, I mean, a lot of us look at things and we're like, man, that was really dope or whatever, but we don't go out of our way to like call them and tell them or comment on it or say things.
You just
the vocal minority is very loud. I hate this. You suck. Like, and to be honest, that, The narrative is at this point is just it's so tired. It's become a pop culture thing that where MGK is a scapegoat.
Mm.
And I've just kind of like I laugh because I'm going, you are now the conformist. Lost Americana is the enemy of the conformist thinker. It's the enemy of the ones who pick on the weak. It's the enemy of the bro. you know, right, like, which is my mortal enemy. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a migraine. I'm on a Pat McAfee show.
Big sports guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What sport did you play?
I was a tight end. I scored one football. I mean, one.
That's crazy. Let's not do that
that's
shit.
Crazy.
Don't do that shit. Hold
up. And then I'm not a sports guy. I don't.
Yeah, sure.
I don't.
Believe it or not.
I said that. You know, but like.
Because you said football instead of a touchdown.
Because I said I scored a football instead of a touchdown. Hilarious. So stupid. But.
People piled on.
But anything that I do, I'm just like, guys, hey, man, I'm not trying to be that clever.
And also, it's like if you can sort of float above, because you mentioned earlier starting as a battle rapper. That's a permanent defensive posture.
For sure, permanent. Dude. I'm so, like, if I need to reawaken that guy, he's there. Always there. I could care less about being liked, man.
Yeah. But you talk about yourself as this polarizing artist, which you are. I think you're a huge punching bag on the internet. Yeah. And for music fans, it's like, you know, I think of it along the lines of like what Nickelback was when I was a kid or a teenager. You know, it's like people are like, oh, MGK, I don't care how many hits he has. I don't care how many number ones he has. Like he's a poster boy for bad music. At the same time, you've had a huge amount of success in your life dating all the way back to before you were famous. You've been proving people wrong your whole career. You say, you know, you obviously still identify as an underdog, someone with a chip on their shoulder, but you walk into the Apollo. Take a millennium, somebody better go. You walk into Diddy's Bad Boy Records, you win them over. You know, you
beef. Well, I had the whole industry trying to sign me at that point. Mm-hmm. I wasn't walking into nowhere. Mm-hmm.
But they that's what I'm saying. You. Like people were coming to you. You know, you beef with Eminem. You come up, you come out at least even, if not on top. You know, like all of these moments where the quote unquote hate for you could have buried you, like it only made you more famous. So you've actually been winning for a really long time. Like, but do you not allow yourself to feel that because then you won't have any motivation left?
Yeah. I mean, I say it on the first track of Lost Americana where I said, all the pages are blank until my life goes to shit. I know I do that on purpose just to write again.
Mm-hmm.
Great bar. It truly sums up the totality of what I do almost before every album cycle.
Yeah.
Like, you have to tear it all down.
I mean, and we watched it with this one. You know, you mm-hmm. could see it in the news. I'm like, I gotta ruin everything. I've put so much weight on my art that I'm like, oh, I'll bleed out and die for this. I've never even thought about kids or the internet being like, oh, I associate him with bad music. Because it's just like, but that's a vocal minority. Because when I walk the streets, when I sell out arenas, you're talking about, I think I'm one of the, I don't know, five people from any of those XXL freshman covers that sells out stadiums and arenas
mm-hmm.
that has created an unwavering legacy mm-hmm. and given, I think what we should focus on is how much I've given to entertainment. It's not easy to, you know, make some of the vulnerable choices I've made or the bold choices I made or to step up to certain things where I'm like, I don't want to, but if I have to be the one to do it, I'll do it. Or, you know, shout out to Tim from Polyphia, who was like, I'll never forget him saying, oh, MGK made guitar cool again. Like he put guitar, mm-hmm. a guitar on the cover of like multiple number one albums. Mm-hmm. Like I was doing things out of love for the culture. It was never selfish, you know? So honestly, even with stuff like that scene, you know, I love the scene. I grew up in that. You know, I was a hip hop and a pop punk kid. Those were two of my
same.
Those were my ones, man. And I guess same with pop music. You know, those were like that's the holy trinity for me. So, coming from Warped and coming from just being that type of kid in general, I saw that I had a platform and was able to, you know, put attention on the spotlight on that.
And your Warped era also was interesting because in my mind, those late 2000s and the early 2010s Warped was the first time that they invited rappers out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
All through the 90s and the early 2000s, it's a traveling punk showcase. Yeah.
Still Gym Class and Heroes, really.
Gym Class Heroes and then Atmosphere, like all those guys. And so that era, I remember going to Warped and being like, oh, they finally figured out that they're actually talking to each other. They're not talking past each other. They're talking to each other. So the fact that you, I assume, went to Warped probably just
for
as
sure.
a kid.
O-1.
Yeah. And then got to be on Warped. Yep. That was always the logical next step from a musical perspective.
Agreed.
And then eventually it trickles out to the point where you can say, hey, I made 3-4 rap albums with mixtapes more. And now I'm reimagining myself in pop punk, but if you listen, you still hear that texture of what I was doing
and
in
that,
the early 2010s.
And that bop, because that's why the new generation was rocking with the pop punk albums I was dropping.
Yeah.
Because they grew up loving hip hop.
Hip hop as well.
Like Migos is their Beatles, you know, to them like that. Like that. So.
Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of pop punk influence in that generation.
For
what
sure.
Are you talking about? Yachty or
absolutely.
Uzi or
McCarty, even listen to Thug. Like, do you hear the way he plays melodies? Like, yeah. Juice. Oh my God, it's so much pop punk. Even like, dude, Juice opened for me on Halloween in Denver at Red Rocks.
Oh, wow.
And I went to his dressing room before the show and we were chopping it about music. And dude, all we were talking about was pop punk.
Sure.
Right? You talked about being the enemy of the bros and that this is nonconformist music. You know, you think of Warped Tour as sort of anti conformity, you know, a commercialized version of it. But for suburban teens, especially, like, where does that come from in young Coulson, like in your youth? Because I think people know you as MGK. They know you as a tabloid figure. They don't know that you lived all around the world as a kid, grew up in Cleveland. Like, talk to us a little bit about how you came up and how that influenced who you are today in terms of those still having those same enemies.
It's a great question. I mean, one, even just speaking to Pete the other day, I didn't even know he didn't know this. I grew up in Africa till I was six. So with that in general, your entire subconscious, your those really formative years, you're growing up amongst so many different cultures, prayers, skin colors, ethnicities, languages.
You speak Arabic, I read online,
I used to, yeah. It's a very complicated language to keep up.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
At this point, I can't even tell you what I have for breakfast. So, like, I grew up with, like, very kind of open, just open heart and open mind with everybody.
Receiving
so,
different cultures.
For
different
sure. So, yeah. I came to America and kind of became a product of bullying because of how my body was formed at a young age. I was very tall. You know, when my mom and dad split, we became, for lack of better words, like poverty kind of ate up my clothes. Like I just didn't have much of many. I you know, I had an outfit. It didn't fit cool. I was the guy who went and like got the wrong ears pierced, you know,
didn't know which the cool one.
You know, didn't know how, whatever, to kind of acted goofy. I was obsessed with Jim Carrey. And so I would do all these impressions and everyone was just like,
who's the new kid?
Yeah, like, what's up with Ace Ventura over here, you know? And at the same time, my house was very, very dark, you know? Like, I was living in my aunt's basement with my dad, and it was, I mean, dude, really, really abusive, really riddled with, like, Listerine to this day triggers me so hard because I shared a bed with my dad and he would always go and throw up in the morning and come back in the bed and he would have Listerine on his breath. And it was just all, it's just like, just the stuff going on upstairs.
This was in Cleveland?
This is in Denver. This is before I moved to Cleveland. I moved around a lot. Like Cleveland is kind of where my manhood like happened. Like that's kind of where I experienced all of my adulthood things. Like lost my virginity, got robbed, got my first job, you know, finally found a group of friends that, you know, I found some acceptance with.
But the dark period was in Denver with
No, no, dark period was in Cleveland too. The dark period kind of followed me.
It's all a dark period.
It was all a dark period, dude. I think like my light came around 29 years old, 29, 30. At this point, day and age, like if I'm feeling good, I'll feel good. And if I'm not, then I just don't do anything, which is why I haven't done a lot of press around the album. But I also really believe in the music, and I also have been showing a lot goofier side of myself and kind of the anti-bro, dude. Like I don't care that my nails are painted. I don't care that I have an androgynous look. I don't care to fit into whatever the mold is of like a rapper should be.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's most important is the music. The irony is that like Freddie Mercury was gay and made one of the biggest bro anthems of all time. We Will Rock You.
Yeah,
like
sure.
It doesn't, nothing matter. Like all that matters
it's
is the music. They need to get their insecurity away from the fact that I just think they think my girlfriend's going to look at him. And I truly believe so much of the internet, oh, he's associated with this. It's I'm really not like that. It's a community of people who are like, I need to destroy him because he's a mirror of things that I can't be free enough to do myself.
Hey, it's John. We are going to take a break here for the song of the week. You can see the video of me riding around, listening and reviewing new music in my car at Instagram.com/popcast, TikTok.com/popcast on our channels. Like and subscribe. This week, we have an Atlanta rap hit, a viral sensation by Pluto and YK Nice. It's called Whim Whammy. Get ready.
You know what they say. Where there's a whim, there's a whammy. Get in. Let's talk about it. Here we go with Whim Whammy. It's by Pluto, who's an Atlanta rapper with YK Nice. And the demands here are clear. Put some Lulu on this butt. Can't get no coochie at the queen. Put some Lulu on his butt. One of the big lies about rap music in the 90s and the 2000s is that only one or two female rappers could be successful at any given time. But one of the best things about how social media has changed hip hop is it's made plain that there are plenty of pathways for female rappers to get heard and plenty of audiences who want to hear them. Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion, Lotto, Flo Milli, Glorilla. And of course, you can't talk about this moment without Sexy Red. Sexy Red helped set a template for how a lot of younger female rappers are approaching the game, with the freedom and abandon to make any kind of song that they want to make. Part of the reason this song works so well is because of the catchphrase. There's also a remix with Sexy Red. But also, Pluto and YK Nice have actually two very different approaches to the rapping. Pluto is kind of offhandedly slurring her verse. But then the second half of the song with YK Nice is so much more grounded. And it's a testament to the flexibility of this beat that both approaches sound equally effective. The other thing that's happening in the post-Ski moment is female rappers are having so much fun. You listen to a lot of hip hop right now put out by male artists, and it's angsty, and it's tragic, and it's dark. But almost all the songs coming from big female rappers right now that are breaking through are loose and fun and toying.
Put some Lulu on this
one. Oh, not on his butt.
Hi, I'm Juliet.
I'm Joel. We're from the New York Times games team.
And we're here talking to fans about our games.
What's your vibe when you're playing one of our games?
It makes me feel like I'm procrastinating in a really productive way.
It just scratches an itch in my brain.
Do you have a routine?
I'm doing long distance with my boyfriend. We'll call every night and share our screen. We do connections, the mini, and then strands. Always in that order.
Aww.
Do you have a favorite?
The mini. We try and get it under 30 seconds. We rarely get it under 30, but that's always the goal.
Folks will really time themselves, but with Spelling Bee, I give myself all day.
I play it when my kids are going to bed.
Do you guys play together?
My daughter plays. She likes playing Wordle.
If you ever miss a day, there's also archives.
That's so great to know.
And you have it for connections as well.
Lord help me, I'm just going to be doing that all day, every day.
New York Times Game subscribers get full access to all our games and features. Subscribe now at nytimes.com/games for a special offer.
Welcome back to Popcast. That was our song of the week. Pluto, YK Nice, Whim Whammy. You can check out all the songs of the week on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Popcast on each of those platforms. Now it's me, Joe, back with MGK.
It's interesting that you say people see you as, you know, alpha, essentially. They're intimidated by you. You're a good-looking guy. You found a lot of success. Like, they see you like that, but inside you feel like a neglected outsider weirdo that you were when you were doing a Jim Carrey impression. So it's like the perspective, It's all relative. You know, like you totally. Can be both. You can be the scary bro to someone.
Right.
Or you can be the solace of the weirdo, you know?
And also it sounds like part of building on that, part of what you're trying to communicate about this, like stripping away the cool is like, how do I reconcile those two things? How do I let people know, hey, you may perceive me this way. This may be what the MGK brand has been.
Cool.
But actually what's underneath that, the thing that animated it, is actually quite traumatic, quite challenging.
Yeah.
Is that sort of where you feel like you're returning to in a way?
Yeah, because that will inevitably influence how others are perceiving
you. Yeah.
Because my face will be the same, but something will be different to them. Like they'll see someone who's more grounded and more calm. And I think what I've been missing is just a love for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I take like that broken version of me and, you know, I put my arm around him and I say, dude, like, I know we've, you know, went through the trenches together, but it rains before the rainbow, you know, and that's, I think also too, the flaws are what makes us.
Sure.
Interesting humans.
But it also takes something to own the flaw, to own the trauma.
Well, I think I grew up in a very, very masculine house, you know, so I grew up where it was like, if I it was the type where I would come downstairs and my dad would be like, you're dressed like a fat. You know, go change.
Go change.
And, you know, we went through a lot of eras together where he would be one person, then it'd be another person when I got home. And, you know, I had many years of being like, where's my mom? And he would have many years of saying all of these things. And then, you know, 15 years later, my mom and I, after he passed, you know, find this reconnection and I end up learning all of these false narratives I was fed as a kid. It was so unfair to that little boy, because when you look around and the two people who are supposed to unconditionally love you, one isn't there and then the other person is just like beating all of their own issues with life into you and all of their unsatisfaction into you. And then you go to school and you're getting jumped or you're getting laughed at. I used to try to sell my mixtapes at high school and I was in love with my TV screen. So if I saw Paul Wall and Slim Thug and all them on MTV and I'm, you know, working for free for who was my manager at the time at the Airbrush store downtown, who was 350 pounds, shout out to Dante, I would borrow his fake fur coat, which was for a man who's 350 pounds. Also, it's a fur coat, which is ridiculous on a skinny white boy in high school. And I would wear that to school and I would be selling my mixtapes and people were just like, bro, who is this goofy? Like, what world are you living in? Like, dude, do your math homework. You're never going to blow up, you know? And so, I never had a chance to be who I wanted to be. You know, when you can't even leave your room or like, dude, sometimes my dad would just bust the door open and bring all of the shit in there. So I didn't feel safe anywhere. That's why I lived in the attic, because at least I could hear the feet coming up so I could prepare like, all right, well, like this, it's about to happen, you know? And so like it was less of a surprise. I literally had a room next to him and then I moved to the attic so I could be prepared by the time he got upstairs to whatever was going to like happen to me.
Like the sort of MGK battle rapper character as a teenager, did you consciously understand that you were developing that persona as a reaction to the challenges?
No, I just knew that I was nice at making fun of people with rhyming and everyone reacted to it. And that was the first time that people were like, I'll never forget my yearbook the year before I started battle rapping and my yearbook after. No signatures. Oh, wow. The year after I started battle rapping.
Wow.
You're going to blow up, man. You're going to be big time. You know, let's hang out.
Yeah. So you didn't see it as armor. It was just a path to acceptance for you.
Yeah. I don't think I had armor. I think that's why I just like let it. I just like
took it.
I took it, bro. That's why when people are like, how did you do all these tattoos? How did you go through all this? I'm just like, dude, this has been like since day one for me, dude. Like my mom was telling me a story when we were on a bed and my dad was holding me and a picture frame dropped on my head. And I was just like, all right, it's been happening since. I mean, even if you feel my head, I have like the bumps from the forceps that they got to grab you out with.
Still.
So I still have like, you can feel like the forceps bumps in my head still, you know, like.
You've been embattled.
I think so. I came out that the umbilicals around my neck. My dad was talking about he it twisted me out with it. I was like, oh man, I don't think y'all did that right.
So it hasn't been easy. The other thing that's happened since you've made this turn towards freeing yourself, towards being a rock musician and a rapper and a pop singer doing a choreographed dance in his video, you've been in movies along the way. But I feel like really since the pandemic, since 2020, and the start of your relationship with Megan Fox, like, you've become a public figure. You've become a tabloid fixation, you alluded to. And then you talked about having to strip yourself down before you make another body of work. It sounds like the world was stripping you down leading up to the end of 2024. And you were self-destructing a bit. And then what happened to make you hit rock bottom and say, now is when I have to go get myself right. Now I have to.
I went to rehab a couple times before. I guess I don't know how much I would actually say. I think, you know, there's a song called Treading Water. It's track 12 on the album. That's probably the closest to, maybe it's almost like the music speaks better than how I would be able to articulate it.
I wrote this in room 3, spending Christmas in rehabilitation. I got no phone, just a cell that I'm trapped in while my home's vacant. I'm an impatient, but I lost patience. I just broke something, but I'm fixated on the gossip that I know is happening while I'm just being left out of the conversation. It's a complicated relationship.
I mean, every track on this album, I can either point at and be like, oh, this movie was playing on mute during the song, or oh, this happened. Like, there's a lot of, I mean, just in the sense of, I mean, a funny twist, like a comic relief story, the Sweet Coraline is about me standing outside of New York City smoking a cigarette with my friends. And this, it was freezing cold. And this girl runs across the street and she's in this baby t-shirt. And she's clearly from Ireland or something. And she's like, oh my God, are you Machine Gun Kelly? And usually I'm always like, no, because it entertains me. But I was like, she was clearly freezing and she, you know, I was like, yeah. And she wasn't from here. So I was like, maybe this will really make her trip, you know, exciting. And I said, yeah. And she said, Oh my God, me and my girls, we were over there in the bar, like debating if it was you. They're all freaking out. I look over, they're all in there like, and then she was like, I just have, you know, can I ask you a question? And I was like, yeah, anything you want.
Wow.
And she goes, how did you fumble Megan Fox? I said, God damn. God damn. My whole cigarette cipher was just like. And
her friends would be like, bet her that she wouldn't do it.
My boy goes, do you want to redo? Because obviously we were like, she was just, as soon as it came out, she's like, all right. Like, I was like, that's the question you wanted to ask? Like, you ran all the way across for this? And my friend's like, do you want to redo? She's like, yes, I want to redo. Oh my God, I'm sorry. Tickets to My Downfall was a fucking phenomenal album. honestly, dude, a taxi is careening down the street. Dude, we went and grabbed her and pulled her out right before.
She almost got Final Destination.
But if she wouldn't have taken that take back, I don't know if we would have just been like, fuck
Well,
she took the take back and she was nice and she complimented the album.
She said her karma. She said her karma.
So you wrote a song about her?
But if you listen to Sweet Coraline, I'm in the studio with Travis Barker, Slim, Omer, Fetty also.
Yeah, sure.
Bays, a bunch of my friends, and I tell Trav the story because I just got back from that. I was like, man, this fucking shit, man. He's like, dude, that's hard. You should write a song about that. So I go, lady, I just met you. I don't know your name.
She's definitely going to make a TikTok about when she knows that she's the subject of that. She's definitely going to
tag us. You just made her famous.
Yeah, tag us.
But to be fair, I think as a songwriter, I've been really slept on for a long time. And I just think...
Speak on it.
I think we have lost sight of... There is so much complexity and simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
And there actually is so much that can come... Because if you listen to Sweet Coraline, just... surface level.
Sounds like the Strokes.
For sure. Which obviously, dude, we also were just paying tribute on this album again to just like all these eras that we love.
I mean, you literally sing Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind.
Yeah, which also a funny story too. I have a story. Every one of these, I got a story. I'll tell you that one. Point about something like Sweet Coraline. You could dismiss it as like, oh, it's a song about a girl. This is a song about one sentence that I extrapolated into an entire record.
But think of how much is embedded in that one sentence.
For sure.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's fascinating.
So the fact that I can take that.
Unearth it all.
Absolutely. I take one ingredient and I can make a meal in which I can explain why all the notes are hitting this certain way when you eat it. And also, dude, there's brilliance and puns and such rap shit going on in these. When I say Sweet Coraline, I'm hanging by a thread. Dude, it's such a bar. Like, Coraline, Tim Burton's, like, one of my favorite creations he's done, everything is, she's sewn, you know? I'm hanging by a thread. Even speaking of sewn on Indigo, when I say, needles sewed new clothes, but it's more than it seems.
That's a rap bar.
Needles sewed new clothes, but it's more than it seems.
Okay, Marshall Mathers somewhere nodding his head.
But this is the thing. I actually was wondering as I was listening to this record, because this album touches on so many different styles and also features songs where unexpected things are interwoven. You talk about the importance of songwriting. I wanted to know about the difference in you as a writer of bars and a writer of songs.
Right.
Because you had many years where you were writing bars.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. And then songs were built around them.
This is what happened. I was such a live performance artist.
Yeah.
And wasn't.
A wild boy.
Yeah, for sure.
Literally.
And that song even grew to its, what's
apex.
It word? To its apex via live performances.
Yeah.
That came from me going to South by Southwest, going to whatever that one notorious thing is where I went to like an Apple store and kicked over the computers and Best Buy pulled the album off the shelves and were like, we're not selling this here. And just like, I did all, like, I made sure everyone was like, I'm nuts, dude. Dude, it was an age of chaos.
Abandon.
For sure.
Yeah.
And stunts.
Yeah, and stunts.
Yeah.
I realized, though, as the venues got bigger and as I became more popular, people are having a lot of trouble singing along to, like, the words.
In many ways, what you're talking about anticipated Travis Scott, Rolling Loud, Mosh Pits.
I truly, truly believe it. Like, what if we didn't exist? I don't know what if that would have came. Undoubtedly, those dots connected.
I saw you at Rolling Loud in one of the early Rolling Louds, and I was actually it was quite a funny moment. I was walking backstage. I mean, like, you know, like the pathway. And what's that?
Humble brag.
Just slight flex. Just calm flex. And I'm walking past the stage, and I hear a crowd going absolutely batshit. And I had no idea who was performing on it. It was midday. And I turn and I see the stage and there's no one on the stage. And I was like, all right, that's weird. It's like crowd's going crazy. And then I look up and there's you dangling from something I would personally not choose to dangle from.
Was this New York?
Yes.
I was on acid there.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Scarier.
I remember that. I remember looking down because I was up there and I looked down and I felt like I was riding a surfboard in the Pacific Ocean. I was like, dude, my legs ain't.
Wow. Well, it was the wild boy in action and very much connected those threads.
Rage was such a big part of the beginning of what we had.
Rage the feeling or rage against the machine?
No, rage the feeling.
Right.
And like us
also,
putting like,
someone,
dude, like
we,
if you look at
barriers.
2011 South by Southwest, we used to wear vests that said Ragers on them,
which
I think was, you know, like me and Travis Scott, like we when he was opening for us at a certain festival, I forgot, we had kind of had like a little, it was kind of like an ownership over.
Oh, like a little friction?
Over
who was the true rager?
That true rager, you know?
Oh, wow.
And dude, I mean, he fucking has taken it to the moon and it's awesome. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you're like, it's yours. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah, hearing you and Flocka on the Wild Boy room, you know, you're just like, nobody at that time was doing that kind of thing at that level of intensity.
You gon' need King Kong if you step to me.
Felt like it was an outlier, and it turned out it was in many ways. Yes, that too.
Truly. Because yes. I tried to get Waka to do Wild Boy with me really early in my career, and his bus pulled up and his manager came out and he was like, we need $8,000. And I was like, oh fam, like I'm broke.
Yeah, sorry.
Regrettably. Come back in a couple years.
Yeah.
So I watched the tour bus pull away, and I think 8 months later we had kind of started blow up mixtape wise, and I was at SOB's here in New York. And dude, I see this 7 foot tall dude with dreads and it's Waka in the crowd at SOB's, and I was like, dog. it's you. I've been
trying to get you.
And so the show ended. We played Oh, Let's Do It. That was, he was just blowing with that song at the time. And we like raised together in the crowd of that. And then afterwards, that same night, we went and recorded Wild Boy.
Oh, amazing.
And I was in the booth with him and I was like, yo, it'd be funny if you said, like, suck my Dragon Balls. Like, just like, dude, like we were unhinged and it was awesome, dude.
But you were talking about wanting to have more songs that people could sing.
Oh, yeah, bars versus songs.
So you were building towards this.
Yeah, but that's why I built towards singing, because the crowds, I wanted them to be able to sing with me.
Yeah.
And I like, there's something tribal, and maybe that's just the Norwegian in me, where it's the Viking aspect of like many voices as one feels like everything on the ground will lift. It feels kind of, when everything is in harmony, it almost feels scary.
Yeah.
It's like the power that you have when we are all together, like the love frequency that can raise it's unexplainable what happens when 100,000 people or 40,000 people or even, dude, 500 people are singing the same thing at once.
Why do you think white rappers often end up making rock music or country music or whatever? I feel like it happens a lot. You know, obviously with Jelly, even you go back to the Everlasts of the world. Like, there's always been this kind of journey into
Kid
a
rock,
new Kid Rock. Yeah,
right. I'm not the spokesman for the whites.
That's all right, but I'm curious, but no, but as a philosopher.
I'm an off-white. Okay. I don't know why that lore exists for that. I mean, Jelly, though, by the way, let's just put some respect there real quick, because serving the amount of time he has in rap, as far as the amount of fucking rap albums he's dropped and the amount of shit he has been certified for in the streets, that motherfucker can make bunny rabbit stuffed animals for the rest of his life. I think he kind of just is and also, like, as a man, one of the truly most authentic
pure spirit
friends.
You sat on his couch.
But I've sat on his couch when I've been at my lowest.
He was present for you.
Oh, dude. You want to even talking about that November, December thing? I mean, the dude who would come visit me on weekends while I was in rehab and have lunch with me and, you know, let me bawl my eyes out and be like, dude, I need help.
Yeah.
Like, I'm lost. Like, he was sitting across that table from me. I'd done it so much differently because I've been rapping this whole time.
Yeah.
I keep rapping. I freestyle all the time.
Sure.
I do features all the time.
You rhyme J.K. Rowling with J.R.R. Tolkien on this very album?
Dog. By the way, like, thank you for pointing that bar out. That bar is cold work, dude.
That's
like,
a crazy contorting of pronunciation to make those words rhyme. Yeah.
But I just think with me in particular, there's an anomaly going on here where it's like, you obviously know, right? The next album is going to be a rap album.
Sure.
I understand that you feel like your musical journey is unique. I understand that you feel like you loved pop punk and hip hop equally growing up. But I think when people get, I don't know if upset by it is the right term, but when people feel like white rappers have more flexibility to change their genre and land in a safer place that is less oriented around youth, that is less oriented around, you know, quote unquote danger, like that basically it would be much harder for a black rapper.
Andre 3000? Hey, ya! Oh my God, are you serious?
I'm not saying it's never happened before.
Roses?
I'm not saying it's never happened before.
Yeah, but he's an anomaly.
Yes.
MGK is an anomaly. I can't speak for, like, there is some where I'm like, I'm with you. Some I'm like, hey, why'd you do that?
Is it necessary? Is it authentic?
Or some stuff I'm like, yo, dude, you want to talk about culture? I'm a part of the culture. I'm a street kid.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's why black, white, I'm very aware of the optics, and I'm very aware of how it was when myself, Mac Miller, and Yellow Wolf were coming up.
Yeah.
Because it was very much like, earn this.
Sure.
Which is why, like, and I was physically scrapping to rap in the areas I was from.
Sure.
So it became very hard for me to accept newer ones where it was like, yeah, we're joking, and like, I was just kind of like, yeah, you're corny, you know?
You didn't have to fight for it.
You didn't have to fight for it, but hip-hop to me is synonymous with punk rock as far as it's a it's a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fight for your right to blank, whatever that is. Like, it, no matter what, it's fighting the power, fighting the system, fighting your parents, fighting police, mm-hmm. fighting, I don't know. Like, it's fighting for something. You know, even I love track 5 on Stillmatic from Nas. He said, their plan was to knock me out the top of the game, but I overstand the truth is all lame. I hold cannons, I shoot balls of flame right in the fat mouth when they call my name. Nas, too. It's just like, he's fighting critics. He's fighting enemies. He's fighting himself.
Yeah, and also it's at that point, it's like, is he too pop? He started out opposite. Is he too pop? Does he have the right to make those records? Yeah. Is he welcome? Is he welcome back? Doing the other kind of records, yeah.
But so you don't think you've been afforded more freedom to play around in genre?
Hell no. Did you see the response when I picked up a guitar? Did you see that? What do you think? Think any of
you
the folks?
You told me it was a vocal minority.
Any color was excited to see me do that? I think everyone was like, bro, rap.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ironic.
Because, but I'm one of the few who has true bars. And I don't think, I think, I was talking to DJ Head about this, where he was like, the last thing that MGK needs to do for me is prove that he can rap.
Okay.
Like, we already know this.
I actually went back to see what the first thing I'd ever written about you or anything that you had done was. And I found, like, an offhand sentence in a piece from, like, 2011 or 2012. And I drew a line between how you rapped and Twista, Crucial Conflict, like Midwestern, complicated, but melodic rap. And obviously Chopper. Bone Thugs. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that being a tradition that you felt like you learned from. It's not simply, a lot of people come in, they're like, oh, I grew up on Nas and Mobb Deep. That's easy.
Right.
I grew up on NWA. That's easy. But coming from the Midwest, where you had this very specific style, I've got to imagine that helped shape your idea to what it meant to write bars.
Yeah, track 2 on Twista's Kamikaze, was that his?
Kamikaze.
Yeah, that album. Track 2 was called Kill Us All. That was a pleasure to
rap along with.
Yeah. It was like, and I could do that at the drop of a pin. It was like the guy who could solve a Rubik's Cube. It was so complicated and so niche, but I could rap that or any Bone Thugs song. I think there was something about that region where we have this kind of southern draw, but we also have... I don't know why chopping was a thing for that region, but that was very much like we grew up.
Super intricate, a lot of syncopation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's almost like jazz to me, like the cadences are almost like jazz-like in a true way, which I know is like an overwrought thing to say about rap music in the 90s, especially.
I think, I mean, you even just bringing that up makes me be like, oh, as I'm diving into the rap album that shall come, I need to make sure that I pay homage to that, because that was, even for me, with the song called Chip Off the Block, which is one of my original, you know, kind of big internet moments as a mixtape artist.
Yeah.
That was, you know, a lot of chopping and stuff, so I got to do that. But to your point of with... I don't know, between black and white. Did the Andre 3000 thing resonate at all?
It does. I think
he's chasing that freedom that is maybe more easily afforded to white artists.
I think especially from the industry perspective, I think what happens, you know, if I'm a guy sitting at a record label and I'm like, oh, I've got this handsome guy, he can rap, he can sing. Wouldn't it be great if he did more singing there? Like, I feel like there can be other mechanisms, and it's not saying that that's a decision that wasn't made in your mind, but in terms of like, does the record label support it? Do they allow it? Do they let Lil Uzi do the same thing if he wants to do it? That's really, it's the systemic stuff that I think we're sort of like talking about.
Even more so than the audiences.
Yes.
I just come with a entire world of built already. When I'm ready to present.
Yeah.
You can't deny me when I'm believing in something, because I will duct tape myself to the door until they press upload and I'm like, I want this, you know. So
seem like a hard person to argue with.
I think there's just that like element too, you know. I mean, because cliche, you could be like, this is the product of a machine. It's not so ironic. It's literally a product of me and like my boys. We're not trying to be clever. I'm so over people being like, look how smart we are. Look at what niche genre we are. Look at it's like, that's cool. And I'm all for it. But I feel this thing of when we all get in the room, because me and you would for sure do this. We'd be like, what's your favorite album? We're all gonna dig stuff up on
YouTube.
No. We're gonna dig. I guarantee none of us are just gonna like let something easy fly. None of us are gonna be like the Black Album. We're all gonna be like, yeah, dude, I totally like the unwritten tapes from Nas's unreleased. Sure. Blah, blah, blah. You know, like,
you mean, are you talking about the Children of the Corn mixtape with Big L and Cameron?
Exactly.
Is that what we're talking about?
Exactly, bro.
Seems like it.
Tell us the Third Eye Blind story, and then we'll eat a snack.
So we flipped Semi-Charm Kind of Life, and there's so many different versions of this song. I want something else to get me through this Semi-Charm Kind of Life. Baby, baby, I want something else. I'm not listening when you say. But I was like, man, we need to clear this, dude. That kind of... It's kind of a complicated thing.
Singing one of the most famous songs of all
time.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, I know Steven. I know Steven because my friend Mod called me. He was like, Third Eye Blind's going to be an emo night. I know you sampled that song. Like, maybe you should come holler at him. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
So I said, done. Pulled up. I said, hey, man, my name's MGK. Dude, like, you're probably going to get a letter that's like, we want to sample this song. I just wanted you to hear it from my mouth first that I'm a massive fan.
It's an homage.
For sure. Like, this is, it's done with respect. And like, I am of this scene. Like it's in good hands. And so he's like, oh, cool, man, whatever, you know, take my number. And, you know, I followed up with him a couple times and he was always really cool. And I've sent him other songs that I was just doing. And he was like, he liked the songwriting. And one day I was like, hey, is today a good day for me to play this to you? He was like, sure, I'm in town and I'm in this house in Malibu. And I was like, great, I'm in Santa Monica, but PCH was blocked because of the fires. So to get there, it would take 2.5 hours because you have to drive all the way around. But if you have a parking pass, because you're a resident in Malibu, you can drive up PCH. I didn't have a parking pass, but I did have hopes and dreams. So I pulled my car up to the National Guard and they're there with their AR-15s or whatever. And I roll down. And I'm just like, please be a young police officer who knows who MGK is.
Sure.
And he's like, oh, what's up, man? And I go, hey, dude, what's going on here? I'm acting like I don't know what's going on. He's like, yeah, you can't go through off limits for anyone that doesn't have a parking pass for a resident. He's like, are you a resident here? I was like, no. He's like, yeah, man, sorry, I can't do anything. I was like, look, I'll be completely honest. I'm trying to clear a Third Eye Blind sample with the singer and his house is right up there. And I'm not going to make it in time if I have to drive 2.5 hours around. Is there any way you could just like be a part of the story with me and let me go through? And he was like, all right, don't do this again. Good luck with your song, man.
Wow.
And he let me pull up and I got on the beach and
so the Coraline girl and the National Guard person who let you drive to Malibu.
Dude, you want to know another crazy story? This one's actually quick. Outlaw Overture, the intro of the album. We had essentially wrapped the album and I go, we listened back to it and I was like, oh my God, there's no intro. And for the last 3 albums from Hotel Diablo, Tickets to Mainstream, there was always these really good intros.
Yeah.
And we realized there is no intro for this. And my baby was also supposed to be due, but she hadn't come yet.
Mm-hmm.
And me and Megan were both like, this is so weird because she always has her babies early. What is she waiting on?
Yeah.
And I go in and we do Outlaw Overture. And the second I get to my house and plop my body in the bed,
it's go time.
Megan's water broke.
Wow.
So like my baby was up there like, nah, dad, you're going to finish this album first.
Saga was waiting for the intro.
Saga was waiting for the intro.
Damn. New father. Also, Joe's a new father.
Congrats, dude. Thanks.
How old is your?
4 months.
4 months. But yeah, so you're back in newborn life.
Yeah.
How is that going this time around? I imagine it's very different than the last time you had a newborn.
Very different. I actually don't have to steal diapers from Walmart. It's a pleasure. I am very happy that I can embed music into her
from
subconscious from the early days as far as just like having different instruments to play. I know it's weird. I can play guitar to her and it's cool, but the strings of the ukulele, for whatever reason, I don't know if that's because they're nylon and because they're a lot more high pitched, but the frequency, she really reacts to ukulele.
All right. So every episode of Popcast ends with a snack tasting. You went over to the pantry table. You took a quick look. You didn't even really peruse. You just immediately locked in on the haichus. But these are seemingly a Japanese edition of a haichu.
I did not purchase these. Did you purchase these?
I didn't purchase these.
Were they sent to us?
No memory. Maybe they came from Sawyer.
Maybe Sawyer took a trip, she was traveling. Right? Yep.
Mm-hmm. Looks like they're cola flavored.
Yeah.
Have you had these?
No.
Okay.
But I've had haichus.
But you haven't had this flavor. Okay. I've had haichus.
I'm not going to tell you what the expiration date was, but nice. I'm sure they're still good.
My thing with a haichu is it's expired the minute it leaves the factory. Like it's a complicated hard candy. Yeah.
I'm having a struggle, but I got it.
You got it.
All right.
It's like a cheese. It can't really expire.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It only gets better.
Yeah. It's right. It's like wine. All right.
All right, so I'm just...
Oh, yeah, that's... Talk about luscious and moist.
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
The Japanese know what they're doing.
Oh, yeah, this is good for 3 more years, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's still haichu texture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really good. Really good.
This is maybe my favorite haichu I've ever had.
It's weird what cola flavor they went with. The apple.
When the inside mixes with the outside, it really starts to hit.
Mm. Wow.
But you're right. It doesn't have that full caramelness of cola, and certainly not until you really chew it.
It's almost like they mixed a Sprite with a Coke.
I like that.
It's a journey.
It is.
The food scientist got this one right.
There's a little fizz to it. Like, it almost tastes carbonated.
Yep. I love almost flat pop.
Mm-hmm. Slept on.
Yeah, it is. It is. Leaving your pop in the fridge and coming back for it.
A true Cleveland boy calling it pop.
Yeah, straight up.
Like, also to your point about it not tasting like true cola, we're not in the Coke Pepsi realm. Yeah. Like, we're in the Faygo kind of realm.
Yeah. Or RC Cola.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we are in, yeah.
No, totally. Totally. Yeah. It is more like Lunchables Cola.
And it has like a tart.
Can you toss me another one, please?
Oh, yeah. I could eat this whole bag.
Yeah.
I could definitely eat this whole bag. All right. We rank them out of 10.
Okay.
Where are you at?
I'll give you this. If they would have done a take on Dr. Pepper, that would have given the 9.8 to
You're
me.
You're talking to a real Dr. Pepper head over here.
Yeah. Real soon. Dr. Pepper and Mr. Pibb. Mr. Yeah. Pibb. You ever fuck with Mr. Pibb?
Dr. Pepper is 23 flavors. What is Mr. Pibb?
First of all, Dr. Pepper's a doctor. Mr. Pibb's just a humble man.
I feel you, actually.
He's a humble guy.
That's actually more on the Lost Americana way.
But there you go. That's what I'm saying.
Lost Americana is a Mr. Pibb album.
Lost Americana is Monday through Friday music.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that.
Dr. Pepper is all, he's all like Saturday, Sunday. He's cool. He's for the cool
That's
boys.
Friday. We're that's
like,
a Friday yeah, night. That's
so I don't drink cola,
central.
But I love cola flavor. I'm going to go ahead and say this is a 9 out of 10 for me. It's really strong.
This is absolutely, I would say this is a 9.5 for me.
Cool.
One of my favorite snacks.
I'll go 8.6. There's a little 8.6.
Okay. Tough critic.
I don't want to be. I just feel like
there's no, you gotta be true to your heart.
Yeah. That because they have the tartness, I don't want my cola to be. If they would have presented this as Sprite flavored or something.
Right. Might have been more in keeping. But I think that's part of your palate's working exactly right. Because I think you're right. It does advertise as like a highly caramelized cola, but it is not that at all.
Yeah, I need the more syrup rather than the citrus.
That is our show. Quite a journey this week. Thank you to MGK.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate
you. Great talk, man. Thank you.
Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. Get us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube @podcast. Credits, link in bio. We will be back next week.